Welcome, y'all, to Reproductive Real Talk, where we discuss important issues impacting reproductive health, especially for those living in Eastern North Carolina. I'm your host, Dr. Carlene Cunningham, and today I am joined by Dr. Claudine Walson, who is amazing and is a psychiatrist who is currently in a Women's Health Fellowship. Dr. Walson, tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about our topic today, reproductive coercion.
Thanks for having me. Again, my name is Ifeanyi Walson. I am a perinatal and women's mental health fellow in the Chicago area. So essentially what that means is I see women from around age 18 through menopause for pretty much any reproductive or perinatal related mental health conditions. So reproductive coercion refers to behaviors that interfere with a woman's reproductive autonomy and decision-making. And it generally involves attempts to maintain power and control over a partner's reproductive choices. And this was a concept that was first identified in 2010. So there are three main forms of reproductive coercion. One is contraceptive sabotage, so things like hiding birth control pills or removing IUDs. Pregnancy pressure is another one, and it involves verbal insistence or threats to pressure a woman to get pregnant against her will. And then the third is pregnancy outcome pressure, where a partner threatens violence to coerce a woman about continuing or terminating a pregnancy.
Wow, those are some really disturbing examples. Do we know how prevalent this issue is?
Yeah, so prevalence estimates vary pretty widely based on the population. Studies have found anywhere from 5% to over 56% of women reporting ever experiencing reproductive coercion. And the rates, unfortunately, tend to be higher among certain racial and ethnic groups, younger ages, younger people, lower socioeconomic status, and those engaged in higher risk sexual behaviors. Non-Hispanic Black women have reported rates up to 60%. And adolescents from ages 14 to 19 have had prevalence rates around 20% in some studies. And reproductive coercion, it disproportionately impacts those that are already experiencing intimate partner violence as well.
So those statistics are really concerning. I'm really glad that folks are exploring this really important issue. It's wild that it really was only first defined in 2010. Have there been anything that we've really kind of looked at that can impact this, like interventions or ways to support folks that are experiencing this?
Yeah, the research is still emerging, but a few interventions like Project Connect, ARCHES, and trauma-informed counseling scripts have shown a lot of promise, especially in training providers to screen for reproductive coercion and provide referrals safely. So harm reduction strategies like the safety card resources have also effectively reduced reproductive coercion when combined with provider counseling. But yes, you're correct. We need more evidence-based interventions to address this form of abuse.
Absolutely. Addressing, and increasing awareness sounds like it's really important. And, this is something that I think the workshop is definitely something that can provide some of that increase of awareness. So is this why you're taking part in the reproductive health training?
Yeah, 100%. These can be tricky topics to navigate, and workshops like these are the perfect opportunity to not only educate yourself, but to also get some practice in navigating similar scenarios. So at our workshop, we will have our talks from our faculty, as well as opportunities for discussions on trauma-informed care, abortion care, sexual health, as well as reproductive mental health. And we also will have case interactions where learners who attend will be able to practice skills that they've learned through listening to this podcast and the others and watching the videos, as well as attending the workshop, and then get feedback from faculty and other learners.
Wow, it definitely sounds really interactive, and it's something where a person can take away skills. I'm glad that we have not desired one of those where you just have to sit and listen.
Definitely.
You mentioned a little bit about the importance of creating a safe environment and responding kind of sensitively when you're screening for things like reproductive coercion. So can you tell us a little bit more about these trauma-informed approaches?
Absolutely. You know, adopting a trauma-informed approach is crucial when working with patients who may have experienced reproductive coercion or just other forms of abuse and violence. The key is understanding the impact of trauma and then putting principles into practice that promote safety, trust, empowerment, and avoid re-traumatization for your patients. So according to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, also known as SAMHSA, there are six guiding principles. The first one is promoting a sense of physical and emotional safety through measures like private discussions and non-judgmental conversations. Secondly, being transparent about procedures, ensuring confidentiality, and building trustworthiness with your patients. Third is prioritizing peer support and mutual self-help whenever or wherever possible. Fourth, prioritizing collaboration with patients and sharing power over decisions impacting their care. Fifth is emphasizing patient empowerment, patient's voice, and their choice in the healing process. And sixth is recognizing the role of cultural, historical, and gender issues in the delivery of services. So by embedding these principles, we help to create an environment where patients impacted by reproductive coercion or other types of trauma feel safe, feel respected, and also feel like they are in control of their own care.
Wow. So these six principles, it really sounds like focus on creating more collaborative care and this aspect of kind of interacting with your provider in a way where they're not the one like telling you what to do, but sharing their knowledge with you and giving you choice. I think that's a really important aspect as we think about how we can reimagine and continue to, you know, evolve healthcare from maybe places that it has been historically. Now, thank you so much for that comprehensive overview. So it sounds like using a universal trauma-informed approach is really vital to effectively being able to address some of these issues and often a space where folks aren't re-traumatized. And I really appreciate you highlighting that. Do you have any resources for folks that are here in the East who want to learn more about trauma-informed approaches?
Yeah, definitely. There are actually several initiatives in North Carolina. So one being the North Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence. They sponsored a project called Trauma-Informed NC with resources for organizations to become more trauma-informed. Also, as a part of the NCIOM's 38th annual health policy meeting, they discussed ways to support tools available to enhance screening and care. And of course, during our workshop, I will be providing more instruction on how to actually provide trauma-informed care. And again, we'll have the case interactions to kind of help build the skills that were learned during the workshop.
Awesome. So, I mean, you have given a great overview of what reproductive coercion is, as well as aspects of trauma-informed care and things that we as providers can do to enhance patient autonomy. Like, do you have any kind of like final pearls that you want to be able to share with your listeners?
Yeah, you know, I think when we talk about trauma-informed care, it's really all about giving the power to your patients in several different ways. And so I think, again, this is why this workshop is so important, because not only will we kind of review the principles of trauma-informed care, but we'll also have the opportunity to have discussions and, again, have the case interactions to work on the skills, because it's kind of like everything in life. It's something that you want to practice. Practice makes perfect. So,
definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time today. And I look forward to seeing you at the workshop.
Thank you, Dr. Cunningham. I'm excited. I'll see you soon.
All right.